Welcome to Mind Your Biz Today on South Florida's only all-business radio station, 880 AM. Today's business world is fast-paced and ever-changing. Gain a competitive advantage by listening to Mind Your Biz Today, hosted by Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage. Janie is a best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire with over 35,000 hours consulting C-suite executives. She will help you navigate today's business hurdles and maximize your opportunities with thought-provoking discussions with CEOs, business authors, and thought leaders. Learn the latest trends and profit-producing ideas for growing your business.
Brought to you by the Hudson Institute of Executive Education at Nova Southeastern University. Executive training programs to excel in today's competitive market.
Here's your host, Janie Smith.
Welcome back, South Florida, to Mind Your Biz Today. I am your host, Janie Smith. I am the author of Creating Competitive Advantage and the CEO of Smart Advantage. We have a wonderful show for you today and a very special guest. I'm very excited to bring you Rex Ghosh, who is has an amazing background. This is something every one of our listeners is going to want to pay very close attention to. We're going to talk about two different things. First, let me tell you about Rex. Rex was born in India. He lived in Switzerland, the United Kingdom, Nigeria, Colombia, and the United States. He's traveled extensively, and he is currently with the International Monetary Fund. He's studied at both Harvard and Oxford background. He's also just released an amazing book called The 19th Street Northwest, A Tale of Terror in the World Financial Markets. And this is closer to reality than we all want to even think about. So we're going to talk a little bit with Rex about the global markets, and then we're going to talk about financial terrorism at the second half of the show. Rex, welcome.
Janie, thank you very much for having me on your show.
Well, I'm delighted you could be with us. And I want to ask you so many questions about this. The Wall Street Journal, on a daily basis, we read about what's going on in Greece and the domino effect of that all over Europe and hence the U.S. And then, of course, many are saying the U.S. is the domino effect on everybody else. And then Bernanke's pointing the finger at China. So it's all over the place. So how might the Greek crisis affect Americans? Let's start with that one, since you're so involved in this. And I know these are your personal comments. So let's hear what you have to say.
That's right, Eddie. These are my personal comments. And, you know, the interconnectedness of the world has increased dramatically. I'll get to Greece in a second, but just to step back a moment, about 30 years ago, we used to export about 7% of our output of our GDP, and now it's about 12%. One quarter of all our manufacturing jobs are related to our exports. Foreigners hold about a half of our treasury debt, of that half about two-thirds by the Japanese and the Chinese central banks. So it used to be that people would say when America sneezes, Europe catches a cold. What's probably changed is that if anyone sneezes now, we can catch a cold. And I think the Greek situation is a good illustration of that. You may remember on May 6th of this year, we had the so-called flash crash when the Dow fell by about 900 points in the space of an hour. It was a very scary situation. The SEC released its final report on that a couple of weeks ago, and in fact, they blamed it on a single trade. But it was against the background of protests in Athens over the Greek government's adjustment program, their fiscal adjustment program. They have a debt problem. And because of those protests, the market started to worry that the Greek government wouldn't be able to carry out its program. And that led to worries about the euro, the currency of Greece, and, of course, other European countries. And that meant that the dollar would strengthen, which sounds like good news, but of course it means it's harder for our exporters. And it was that fear that helped trigger this immediate collapse of the Dow.
Well, yes.
May 6th. So, you know, these are kind of convoluted stories, but they are very interconnected, and in a matter of minutes, and, you know, we can feel the repercussions.
Well, when Greece, I believe the number is something like 110 billion or 150 billion euros that they have to pay back. There's the loan that they're faced with, and I think I recently read that the Prime Minister said this week that the IMF has advanced the idea of extending repayment terms, but officials aren't so sure. So, again, you can't get a comfort level with anything that's going on. One day it looks like it's solved, and the next day it's not so sure. And that's, I think, what you're talking about, the domino effect and uncertainty.
Exactly. And, you know, we're seeing that uncertainty play out even in, you know, our own recovery here in the U.S. It's quite common when you have a recession that the economy begins to recover faster than jobs because typically businesses at the initial stages of the recovery will hold off from rehiring because, you know, they don't want to take on the additional costs.
Well, it's interesting you should say that. I work with a group of executive CEOs, and just this week they were saying that in many respects the recession was the best thing because they had gotten fat, really fat. And so as a result, they had laid off, of course, so many people and hence the job market. And they're saying, you know, we're not going back to that level ever again. We learned the hard way. That's to your point. It will be slow.
Yes, exactly. And particularly when there's still uncertainty. They don't want to take on labor costs that that will saddle them with labor costs, especially if the economy doesn't pick up as much as or as fast as they're hoping. So while we have that uncertainty, we're not going to see the kind of robust job growth that we're all hoping for.
And so we're not going to see that job growth. I heard another economist this week say we're not going to see it for a very long time. Are you in agreement with that?
I'm afraid, yeah. Already this recession, the lag between when the economy started recovering and jobs start recovering seems to be much longer than previous recessions. So we're already in a bad situation on that.
So then let's talk about another country that seems to have an impact on us. Why does the Russian crop failure matter to American farmers and families? What's that impact?
Yeah, so, you know, if you might remember in 2008, just before the kind of global financial crisis, we were facing a kind of food and price crisis in the world, food price very sharply. In the crisis that cooled down. But again, we're seeing food prices rising around the world. And, that's, for example, good news for American farmers if grain prices go up. So that's good news on their side. But of course, for everybody else who's buying the food, this is an appreciable impact possibly on their grocery bills. And, you know, many of us are in a much more precarious situation than we were 2 or 3 years ago because, you know, we've lost our jobs, our homes, whatever, our savings.
Yes. And so counting pennies is something that matters to many families today.
Absolutely. And something like a crop failure in one of the major, food, grain-producing countries could have quite a big impact.
So what can you say about manufacturing and export relative to what's going on in China? I keep hearing conflicting reports about people going to China or bringing manufacturing actually back to the U.S.?
Yes. China has been a major phenomenon over the last few years. And, you know, there are obviously concerns that jobs are moving to China. But we have to, and of course, if it's your job that's done so, your view on that is going to be quite strong. We also have to recognize that countries like China, India, Brazil also represent huge opportunities for American businesses. And it is a kind of natural progression that the lower end of the manufacturing moves to lower labor cost countries like China. But even China now is ceding some of the very low labor cost activities to countries like Vietnam,
yeah.
whom China can't compete with on labor costs anymore.
Right.
So this is a sort of natural progression. What it means, though, is that we need to look for opportunities at the higher end. And the mass market in countries like China, the middle class that's getting wealthier, is a huge market for us.
Well, Rex, we just have a couple minutes before we go to a sponsor break here, and I just want to ask you, for our listeners who are running a business, whether it's the corner dry cleaner up to a Fortune 500 company, what recommendation, if any, do you have for people running businesses today in light of the precariousness of these foreign markets and our own markets?
Well, all I can really suggest is to try and be informed about these things. One of the reasons I wrote my book, 19th Street Northwest, is to help explain a bit how the sort of global markets work and how events in one part of the world can have unexpected repercussions on people who thought they're completely divorced from, you know, this international connectedness. So that's a good way to start reading about in a sort of easy format. It's a thriller, so it's a palatable way to read about this. And then, in fact, the IMF also puts out a large amount of publications which are free, and you can get them at the IMF website, imf.org.
Okay, and would you quickly give us your website? We're going to take a quick commercial break.
Yep, I'd be happy to. So it's the same name as the book. It's www.19thstreetnw.com. Stands for 19thstreetnorthwest.com.
All right, terrific. And then we'll be back in a couple of minutes, but I think this is just fascinating because most people, as you say, you had a little subtitle, Global Markets for Dummies. Why should Joe Sixpack care about what's happening? Well, Joe's got to start caring because it impacts us in ways we never imagined. We're not isolated anymore. So we're going to be back in a few minutes. We're going to take a little bit different angle with Rex. We're going to talk about financial terrorism, what you as an individual need to be concerned with your own finances, your own checking accounts and own credit cards, and what's at risk there. So we'll be back with Rex in just a few minutes. Again, special thanks to our sponsor, the Hudson Institute at NOVA. They're the Hudson Institute of Executive Education. Thank you, and remember to go to our website, mindyourbiztoday.com. We'll be right back in just a few seconds. Stay tuned. We'll be returning.
We'll be right back with Mind Your Biz Today and Janie Smith after this word from our sponsors.
Searching for executive training programs to help your company's growth? 90% of South Florida's major corporations have sent their executives to training at Nova Southeastern University's Hudson Institute of Executive Education. With workshops ranging from sales to Six Sigma and from management development to mergers and acquisitions, your executives will gain the skills necessary to immediately impact your bottom line. To customize your organization's training, visit nova.edu/business.
Here is Janie Smith with Mind Your Biz Today.
Okay, welcome back, South Florida. We're going to continue our conversation with Rex Ghosh, the author of this wonderful book, 19th Street Northwest, A Tale of Terror in the World Global Markets. He says it's a palatable read. I can't wait to read it. I'm taking it on my cruise with me next week. It looks palatable and scary at the same time, but I think it's a great way for people to learn about the International Monetary Fund and how the world works. So, Rex, let's talk a little bit about your one of your favorite topics of financial terrorism. Why did you get involved in this? What are some of the things you think people need to know?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So the thriller 19th Street Northwest is about terrorists basically trying to engineer a financial crash as a form of terrorism, and it's a risk that institutions like the SEC take quite seriously. If we go back to the tragedy of 9/11, in addition to murdering several thousand people, this disrupted the financial markets quite severely because being in New York in the financial district, the World Trade Center had some very important financial firms. And on that occasion, the Federal Reserve pumped in $100 billion in one day of emergency funds to the banks, back when $100 billion seemed like a lot of money. They were able to get that situation under control. Sort of since then, of course, terrorists will have seen just how fragile our financial markets are. And for that reason, they could try to exploit that fragility to engineer a financial crash, possibly in the worst-case scenario of the magnitude that we've seen in 2008, 2009.
Yes, I remember, this is the idea of being able to access your money. If your bank was one of those, could you even get into the system? And I do remember, as so many people do, what happened to the stock market days after that,
yes.
As well as, you talk about not just financial markets, but everything. I mean, I fly a lot. I was in the airport the next day, and I was like the only one in the airport, and it was frightful. So the whole airline industry was on its knees for weeks afterwards, and any other businesses that were reliant on that kind of travel. So what can we do to protect ourselves? How do we keep the money out of the hands of the terrorists and keep them out of our wallets?
Right. So there's a few things that we can all do. First, what are the terrorists trying to do or potentially trying to do? One is to move money around the world surreptitiously. And in fact, the Treasury and the SEC are trying to tighten up controls on that. But actually, the September 11th terrorists had to bring in about $300,000 into the U.S. to, buy things like the airline tickets, and were able to do that perfectly legally. Since then, we've got to be worried about them exploiting, our bank accounts, essentially through identity theft, to move money around. So just some common sense things, make sure that if you have credit cards that you look at the statements. Many of us will accept a credit card from a shop. You get a 10% discount or something for the first time you use it, and then you never use it again. You throw it in the drawer and you forget about it. Well, that account is still active, and it could potentially be exploited. I was actually flying back from London to Washington on September 11th and ended up spending a week in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in Canada. And the next day I couldn't even access my ATM. And then a couple of days later it was okay. So I actually had to borrow money from a perfect stranger. And since then, when I travel, I keep some cash and some traveler's checks. And at home also, obviously you don't want to keep a lot of cash, but keep a bit so that just think of a scenario in which you couldn't go to the ATM for 2 or 3 days. How much money would you need in ready cash or in traveler's checks? Do things like that and be careful on things like phishing, which is, you get an email or a text message supposedly from your bank or your credit card company saying there's some problem. Can you please click on this and tell them everything is okay or something like that? And, of course, the moment you click on that link, that's when they get the information from you.
Okay. And so I'm always amazed that despite all of the information and warnings that go out, the phishing and then the scams of the Nigeria people saying, send me money, how many people are still falling for that? They're just not tuned in. And I also see a lot of preying on the elderly. So what can we do to protect those people?
First of all, if something sounds too good to be true, it is almost surely too good to be true. On my website, 19thstreetnw.com, I did put sort of 10 simple tips that I think we should all follow. Nothing brilliant, they're just common sense tips on making sure that we're not duped into providing our personal financial information or letting that loose, which could either be used by people doing fraud, sort of criminal activity, or even in the worst case, by terrorists trying to exploit our bank accounts or our financial system.
Yes.
To move money around.
Rex, I've heard that a number of charities have been exposed to being fronts for terrorist organizations. We hear that now and again, and that's pretty frightful that we're actually writing out checks to help the terrorists. How can we know which is and which isn't?
Yes. You know, of course, 99.99% of charities are perfectly legit and nothing to worry about. But the simple rule of thumb I use is to ask them, is the contribution tax deductible? And if I check with either the state or the Treasury, the Federal Treasury, or the IRS, can you give me a tax-exempt status number? And, you know, that not every legitimate charity will be tax-exempt, but it's a good, easy way to make sure that at least they are kind of registered and the government is the authorities are aware of this charity and, you know, they have the tax-exempt status.
That's a really good suggestion. Another thing that I wanted to ask you about is I keep hearing about these both emerging countries as being good investments, and then depending on how the euro is doing or the dollar is doing, maybe we should be investing in other countries. You had mentioned something about the website of the IMF. If we're thinking of investing internationally, what's the best way to scout that out using the IMF website or any other information to make sure we're headed in the right direction?
Yeah. So one of the things that the IMF does every year with every member country, which is essentially every country in the world now, is write something called an Article 4 report. And those are available for every country on the IMF website. And basically, that's going to be a report that tells you sort of what is the health of the economy, the kind of the big picture of how the economy is doing, what the IMF sees as the main risks, sort of economic and financial risks there. So it's a very good source to read up on the country in general and its economy. Now, it won't tell you about, you know, which particular firm or sector to invest in that country, but it will give you the macroeconomic picture, and it's, you know, perfectly, it's completely free and easily available.
Great. We're getting close to the end of the show. I just wanted to ask you one last question, and then we have to wrap up. I know that we're always worried about the money being laundered through banks, and banks have to report any kinds of suspicious amounts of money over. I believe I asked you before the show, I think you said it was $10,000. Did you say there's new legislation that may be changing and making that even more onerous for banks?
That's right. I believe that they're considering making international wire transfers, not domestic, but international wire transfers of more than $1,000 subject to reporting, which you know is a little bit double-edged in the sense that, of course, you can sort of catch more that way, but on the other hand, you can also get overwhelmed by the amount of information that you're getting, and you're sort of making a bigger haystack to find the needle. So. Plus, of course, from the banks, it's potentially very onerous.
Okay. Well, Rex, thanks so much for being our guest today. This is all fascinating and clearly good information, whether you're running a business or simply any individual who needs to be concerned about these things. Would you once again give us your website, and then I have to close out the show. I just want to really thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me. The name of the book is 19th Street Northwest. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble Borders. And the website is www.19thstreetnw.com.
Okay, thanks, Rex, and thank you, listeners, for joining us. I want to wish you not only a wonderful weekend, but a happy Thanksgiving next week. And please visit us at mindyourbiztoday.com with your comments on the show and any future shows you'd like to hear from us, as well as our website, smartadvantage.com. I am Janie Smith, your host. I am CEO of Smart Advantage and author of Creating Competitive Advantage. So thanks for joining us. Have a great week ahead, and we will see and we will talk to you again next Friday at 4:30.
The Hudson Institute of Executive Education at Nova Southeastern University provides training in more than 30 areas of business, from communication fundamentals to advanced leadership. All courses are taught by instructors who have years of successful corporate experience. Investing in Hudson's executive education programs will provide your team with skills and tools that result in measurable returns. To customize your organization's training, visit nova.edu/business.
You've been listening to Mind Your Biz Today with Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage, best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire. Tune in next Friday at 4:30 p.m. for another great program here on 880 The Biz.